This is Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Tyke.
And I'm Bonnie North. Thanks so much for tuning in today. People around the state are still extracting themselves from an early season snowstorm this morning, and now the cold weather is returning. Temperatures, which reached 50 degrees over the weekend, are expected to climb no higher than the low 20s by Thanksgiving Day. November has seemed like a strong argument against the idea of a warming climate.
But George Stone says our cold weather this month is actually more evidence the Earth's temperature is on the rise. And there's another counterintuitive weather phenomenon going on as well. Stone teaches natural science at Milwaukee Area Technical College, and he's an occasional Lake Effect contributor. He explains what's going on here.
Well, the Arctic is warming faster than any other place on the planet. We know that. That's well documented. And as most of the evidence for climate change is, it's based on measurements, not opinions. So the Arctic's warming very much, and it's having the effect of, at times, pushing the Arctic cold air masses farther south than they would otherwise have been at the season. And so the meteorologists are always talking about the jet stream, but actually the jet stream flows along the boundaries of air masses. And the jet stream marks the position, the southern, and as it crosses North America at this time of year, it marks the southern extent of the Arctic air or the polar air mass. And so it's just that the warming in the Arctic is having the counterintuitive effect of causing colder weather farther south by pushing this cold air mass farther than it would be on the average at this time of season.
Is it oversimplifying things to say that if we look at temperatures in the Arctic, they are warmer than usual, even as the temperatures here are
cooler
than usual?
Yes, there have been record highs set up in Alaska in the last month or so. So that is correct. There are results that people would not normally expect. But I think the main point to get across to everyone is that the planet Earth, is warming. Our energy balance is positive. That is to say, we are absorbing more heat from the sun than we are radiating back into space. And if you're absorbing more heat than you're radiating back, there's no choice. You're going to be warming up.
And so we mentioned there were a couple of counterintuitive pieces of evidence. Another one is the fact that reportedly there is more sea ice than there has been in recent years in the Antarctic. And that on its surface, to use an appropriate metaphor, would seem like a good thing.
Well, it's just the opposite of what's happening in the Arctic. The Arctic sea ice has, on the average, been trending down, less and less sea ice cover, much of it melting off during the summer season than previous records. And we set an all-time record just 2 years ago in 2012 when the sea ice in the Arctic diminished dramatically. That's part of the overall effect of a warming Arctic, and much of that's being driven by the albedo effect. As the sea ice melts and exposes more water, and as the snow and ice on the land melt and expose more soil and rock, those are darker surfaces, and they in turn absorb more radiation rather than reflecting it like the snow and ice normally do. So that's kind of a positive feedback in the Arctic region that's contributing to that warming. In the Antarctic, on the other hand, the fringe of sea ice or frozen ocean surrounding Antarctica has been increasing. And recent studies have shown that, surprisingly, that's due to global warming because the deeper ocean water is warming. That's melting some of the glacial ice around Antarctica. And that melting produces fresh water, which when it mixes with the ocean water, raises the freezing temperature. So more ocean water diluted by the melting fresh water is freezing, and the sea ice is expanding. Just what, you know, it's kind of, we say it's counterintuitive because warming you expect to produce less ice, as it's doing in the Arctic.
At the same time, even if it's evidence of a warming climate, is it a good thing that there is more ice?
Well, it's not good for the tourist industry down there. I mean, you may recall last year one of the tourist ships, they call themselves eco-tourism tours. They take people down to look at the penguins, and I can't complain about that. I did that myself 2 years ago, and it's marvelous. A trip to Antarctica is unbelievable, experience of a lifetime. But it is more dangerous for the ships that want to go in and send their rubber rafts, their Zodiacs, in to land on the beaches and actually set foot on the continent of Antarctica or on the Antarctic Peninsula. So it's a somewhat of a hazardous for that aspect of it. But I'm not sure if it's beneficial generally. It's another indication that the planet is warming.
There is also another piece of conventional wisdom debunking, if you will, that's also on your radar. And in addition to the climate change issue that you were just talking about, the dinosaur extinction millions of years ago, we've understood in a certain way for a long time. But now there is something that is challenging that conventional wisdom as well, correct?
Well, that's true, Mitch. And in the 1970s, a layer was discovered in Italy and then in many other places around the world. That dated back to 65 million years ago, which is when the dinosaurs and many other species became extinct. It wasn't just the dinosaurs. About at least 50% of all the species on this planet became extinct at that time.
I forget, was this the Permian extinction?
No, this was the KT, Cretaceous-Tertiary extinction. The Permian extinction was 250 million years ago. And that was the greatest of all, when 90% of the species disappeared. But the dinosaur extinction, of course, I said thank God for dinosaurs, because that's how we get many of our new earth scientists and geologists. Kids love dinosaurs. They get interested in dinosaurs, and then some of them will want to learn about the evidence and study dinosaurs. There's pretty strong evidence. I attended the annual meeting of the Geological Society of America this past October in Vancouver, British Columbia, and there were two sessions on mass extinctions, major sessions, in which a lot of evidence was presented showing that the impact of the asteroid on the northern tip of Yucatan at a village called Chicxulub, that actually predated the extinction by some 300,000 years. And evidence in other parts of the world doesn't correlate. It doesn't match up. The timing is off. There have been major studies of a huge lava field in India called the Deccan Traps by groups in Princeton University in New Jersey and another universities around the world, showing that these were truly humongous, voluminous eruptions that contributed tremendous amounts of carbon dioxide and sulfur dioxide gas to the atmosphere, enough to change the chemistry of the oceans. And many of the species that became extinct at the same time as the dinosaurs were invertebrates that lived in the oceans. And they can trace this as a gradual process over a longer period of time that predated the asteroid impact. And so I would say the consensus, this has been somewhat controversial. The leader of this research group at Princeton is a woman named Gerda Keller. And I can remember 10 years ago when she was regarded as a heretic and a crackpot, you know, because she had the audacity to challenge this hypothesis, this explanation, which had been developed by the Alvarez, Louis Alvarez, a physicist, and his son Walter. It was so popular and appealing to the general public and to geologists, and had been widely accepted. But here, Gerda has been coming back. They're doing more and more research, her graduate students, postdocs, other people at other universities. And, hey, the evidence is piling up. It's a great example of the scientific method, where a previous explanation may have to be modified or even thrown out altogether if the evidence shows that it's not feasible. So that's what's happening here. It's a great lesson in the scientific method.
And to bring things full circle, do you think understanding the way that extinction took place, if indeed it turns out that it was these massive eruptions that changed the content, the carbon dioxide content in the atmosphere and radically altered the oceans, does understanding that have ramifications for understanding the way climate change is working today?
Well, yes, of course, but it shows that the changes in atmospheric and oceanic chemistry can have a devastating effect on life. And because life on this planet is a web, it's all interconnected, interrelated, and interdependent, an ecological web, that when one thing changes, it affects everything else. It's like sticking your finger into a spider web. The whole web is affected. So there are lessons there, but as to modern or current global warming, this is happening very, very, very rapidly. These eruptions took place over a period of a couple of million years. the changes that we're affecting in the atmosphere and the ocean acidification because of more CO2, are taking place much, much rapid, hundreds of times more rapidly. So that's the big difference.
George Stone, thank you so much.
Always a pleasure, Mitch. Thank you.
George Stone teaches natural sciences at Milwaukee Area Technical College and is the organizer of the annual Sustainability Summit, which takes place in March. He is also a Lake Effect contributor. Meanwhile, you can find an updated weather forecast at WUWM.com.
A new documentary film produced by a biologist at UW-Madison says that humans could be the cause of the next mass extinction. We'll learn more after a break on Lake Effect from WUWM, Milwaukee Public Radio.